22355, United States v. Stevenson. Hi, Mr. Kelleher. How are you?
Very good, Your Honor. May it please the Court, Christopher Kelleher on behalf of the defendant appellant, Prince Stevenson. Mr. Stevenson was convicted on three counts of distributing crack cocaine. We raised two issues on this appeal. The first is that the evidence was insufficient to convict. Secondly, the sentence was improper. Starting with the latter, we respectfully assert Stevenson's sentence of 158 months warrants remand. A number of problems plagued the sentence. First, the 158-month sentence was above the guidelines range. Second, the need to avoid unwarranted sentence disparities among defendants under Section 3553A6 was not adhered to. Third, we have the unusual situation of a principal, that being Mark Woods, receiving a lesser sentence than an underling, such as Mr. Stevenson.
You know, your first point, and of course a lot of the brief, explains how unreliable Woods and Quincy were as witnesses. Yet the jury chose to believe them despite their criminal activity, despite their motivation, despite the court's admonishment to consider their testimony very carefully. Isn't that the end of the story here?
Well, Your Honor, we certainly recognize on appeal we shoulder a heavy burden, especially when we're challenging the credibility. And we recognize that this court does not consider or entertain or make credibility determinations. That being said, again, this case, I would point again to the fairly unique nature of the fact that, again, Mr. Woods was the principal and Mr. Stevenson was the underling. Additionally,
well, that sort of went back and forth, though, didn't it? Your client goes into the hospital for a while. Your client's maybe a little higher than Woods, goes to the hospital, and Woods takes over. He comes back out. The drug operations like this sort of come and go, shift back and forth. Who's on top at time to time changes?
There was certainly some fluctuation here, but again, it was Mr. Woods that introduced Mr. Stevenson, the defendant, to the various buyers, and he essentially brought him into the trade. And just one other point on Judge Rovner's question. The government failed to have independent, non-biased corroboration of these two persons. Again, Ms.
When you say that her testimony is incredible, are you arguing that it was physically impossible for her to have seen what she claimed she saw, or that it was impossible that Stevenson sold her the crack? Which is it?
I would say the latter, Your Honor.
And on what basis do you contend that it's impossible?
Well, Your Honor, based on the tapes, essentially we're arguing that, the conversation that's recorded, it's essentially very, very cryptic, and, there's the possibility, given the fact that there was no actual video recording, it was all audio, that drugs were actually not... were not passed between the two.
I've never heard one of those recordings that isn't cryptic. I mean, they're always dealing in, I don't know, potatoes and oranges and library books and I don't know what, I mean, nobody says, okay, I've got, 5 kilos of crack here.
Certainly, Your Honor. There is lingo that is used.
Why do you think she presents any greater risk than any other paid informant who's trying to get some leniency? I mean, they all turn tail.
Certainly, Your Honor, but I think here the fact that Ms. Quincy was caught with the crack cocaine pipe with her son in the car, and just given her history and the fact that she was an admitted user, addicted, again, as this case, I mean, each case has its unique facts, but I would just the point that Ms. Quincy, along with Mr. Woods, the combination of the two certainly lends itself to the point that these witnesses were less than credible, and again, the fact that there is no independent, non-biased corroboration of these two individuals. I think that's kind of the greater point. I mean, obviously, again, we recognize, we cannot attack their credibility per se, but given the context of this situation and the fact that there's no independent evidence tying in this testimony, lends credence to our position. As to the sentencing issue, I think here, again, given the fact that you have a principal getting a sentence that's 2 years lesser than the underling, is critical, number one, and more importantly, number
two. One cooperates, the other causes the government to go through a jury trial. The justification for the disparity is pretty obvious.
And your client's a Category 6,
yes,
as high as you go. And he wasn't right at the edge of 6. He was well into it.
I fully recognize his record was less than pristine, but given the fact that United States v. England, I would point to the procedural reasonableness of the situation or the sentence. The district court here did not consider Section 3553A6, and United States v. England is the blueprint for a remand here. In England, the court stated the record on appeal lacks any indication that the district court considered the need to avoid.
But here the court specifically noted that he was basing the above guideline sentence on those 3553 factors. I mean, are we to say, Judge Mills, we don't believe you?
Well, Your Honor, it's more to the point that the court did not specifically address A6, and that would be the basis, like in United States v. England, the basis for a remand, because the court did not consider the fact that, for example, here, Mr. Woods, who was similarly situated in the fact that he received, he was charged with 3 counts of distributing crack, the exact same charges that Mr. Stevenson faced here. I see I'm in my rebuttal. Thank you very much.
Hi, Mr. Hartzler.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Joe Hartzler on behalf of the United States. It's clear to me that the Court is familiar with the record. I think opposing counsel has done an excellent job of advocacy with very little to work with. I have nothing to add to our brief, which I hope adequately addresses any questions you might have. So if the Court has no questions, thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much. Sure.
Wait a second.
Oh. Thank you.
Mr. Hartzler, you're the same Mr. Hartzler I so fondly remember.
Just very briefly, Your Honor, again, based on the procedural reasonableness, a sentence must be procedurally reasonable, and a sentence is procedurally unreasonable if the court fails to consider whether its sentence created a disparity between the defendant and others similarly situated. And based on these arguments, our positions in the brief, we respectfully request the court reverse on the basis of the insufficiency of evidence or remand on the sentencing.
So bless you for taking on this.
Yeah.
Did you want to say something?
No.
Bless
fine.
You for taking on this case. You have the thanks of this court.
I appreciate it very much, Your Honor.
And the case will be taken under advisement. And we're going to go on to.